Argument now in the case of United States against Good. Mr. Anderson.
Yes, may it please the Court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant James Good. Mr. Good pled guilty to conspiracy to possess and possess with intent to distribute, MDMA or ecstasy and possession of ecstasy with intent to distribute it. He was sentenced to 84 months in prison, which was the low end of the guidelines range. However, that sentence is still both procedurally and substantively unreasonable. It's procedurally unreasonable because the court failed to address two of his arguably meritorious arguments for a lower sentence. It failed to address his argument that his criminal history was overrepresented by using his conviction for a minor possession of alcohol, and also the argument that he should have got some reduction due to having served time on a state offense that was part of this conspiracy. Of course, as this court has held, a district court is supposed to give reasons for rejecting an argument for a lower sentence that, when looking at the case, isn't obviously frivolous. With respect to the minor possession of alcohol conviction, it's questionable whether the offense should have even been counted under the guidelines if that issue hadn't been waived. Juvenile status offenses and offenses similar to them aren't supposed to be counted.
Was an argument based on Ward made in the district court?
Unfortunately, no, it was not. Counsel conceded that, as a technical matter, the offenses were all properly counted under the guidelines. I don't know why it wasn't.
So if that's true, it was not only not made, it was waived.
That's what I just said, yes. But it's still relevant to show that the argument was, there was a strong argument for a sentence outside the guidelines range, even conceding that any objection to the range as part of the guidelines was waived. And as noted in Ward, the court found that a juvenile status offense is one that, you know, for conduct that would be legal for an adult and is only illegal just because the person is juvenile, such as purchase or possession of alcohol. Now, this court may in the future limit that to people under the age of 18, but it would still be similar to a juvenile status offense, as the Sixth Circuit found, because if Mr. Good had been over the age of 21, it would have been legal.
How does this five-year rule play into, with respect to some juvenile offenses? It's committed within 5 years, is it counted?
Yes, it was within 5 years.
So it would be counted?
Yes. Let's see. Yeah, it would have been. I had to think about that for a minute. But I believe he was 23 at the time of this offense and 19 at the time of the minor possession offense.
So that counts?
It would, even if it had been a juvenile offense, yes.
And how about the driving with suspended licenses? When did they occur? How old was he?
None of them were over 5 years. Some of them were juvenile offenses. Some of them were two or three were adult.
So the district court wasn't wrong in counting them?
No, not as a guidelines issue. That, you know, not a, aside from the fact that it was waived, there was no argument on that part. Simply an argument that the district, it overrepresented Mr. Good's criminal history. And of course, with respect, getting back to the minor possession offense, even aside from the fact, the status offense argument, it's committed by so many people that it's not an indication of somebody's likely to commit a more serious offense.
Didn't the district court, though, put a great deal of emphasis on the pattern? His real concern here was that this guy, despite the fact he was, 23 years old, had shown a disrespect for the law at every twist and turn of his life. I mean, this guy was a confirmed believer in antisocial behavior, period.
The district court did find that driving on a suspended license, in its opinion, is a very serious offense because it shows disrespect for the law.
But that district judge is entitled to make that decision, right?
In general, in this case, the district court was wrong. It is not a serious offense. In fact, the Sentencing Commission would
disagree. But he has a right to disagree with the Sentencing Commission on that, doesn't he? As long as he computes the USSG
he does, if it's not an abuse of discretion, and in this case, it is an abuse of discretion, which is why, as I said, it would have been counted if he'd received less than a year of probation. And for that reason, even when the guidelines were mandatory, other courts had departed downward when a large part of somebody's criminal history was driving on a suspended license.
Mr. Anderson, can you help me with this earlier offense that apparently arose out of the same activity as the federal offense? He was apparently charged in state court, and I had a very difficult time following your argument on that. What do you want us to do about that offense?
Okay. Well, admittedly, if the court had addressed that, he could have chosen to adjust the sentence within the range for that. But the court didn't even address that particular argument, and there's no obvious reason why, just because the sentence was expired, Mr. Good shouldn't have been given the same consideration of whether to make the sentence concurrent or consecutive that he would have been if he was still serving the sentence when sentenced in federal court.
What had he been charged with in the state court?
I believe it was possession with intent to distribute ecstasy. He was caught at the Seattle-Tacoma Airport in possession of ecstasy, which he was going to distribute, and that he was with his co-conspirator at the time, so it was clearly relevant conduct as part of this. It did not increase the offense level, though, because it was a small part of the relevant conduct.
I see. Thank you.
And getting back to the driving on suspended, even assuming there would have been other reasons why the court sentence could have been reasonable, it's unreasonable in this case because the district court's faulty reasoning about the seriousness of that part of Mr. Good's criminal history. Therefore, this court should reverse Mr. Good's sentence and remand his case for resentencing. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Mullen.
May it please the court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. As Mr. Anderson candidly acknowledges today and also in the brief, there's no dispute whatsoever here about the calculation of the guidelines range. The guidelines range was properly calculated here.
It was obviously not properly calculated given Ward, but that argument's been forfeited.
Thank you. That's right. There was no argument, I should say, that the guidelines range, there was no argument below that it was improperly calculated. Indeed, the opposite was the case. Below, the parties agreed that the guidelines range was properly calculated.
I shouldn't have said forfeited. It's been waived given that agreement.
That's right.
Or can't apply. But in fact, we know the guideline range was improperly calculated.
And Your Honor has also correctly pointed out that that argument has been waived. And so with that, we start with the starting point here of a properly calculated range or an improperly calculated range that is not open for dispute at this point. The district court judge gave the defendant's counsel full opportunity to offer any arguments in mitigation, considered the principal argument raised by Mr. Good as well as several other 3553A factors, and exercised its discretion to disregard that argument. Nevertheless, sentenced Mr. Good to the very bottom of the guidelines range. That was all the process that was due to Mr. Good in this case, and for those reasons, we would ask that you affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Anything further, Mr. Anderson?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.